Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Mainland Podcast. We're up to episode number 108. I am Michael Citro, the founder and managing editor of themainland.com, covering all things Orlando City Soccer Club. We cover the Pride. We cover all major soccer events in the city. Beautiful. And joining me is Mainland writer David Rowe. Dave, how are you this week?
A little dizzy from all the goings on in the last couple weeks. You think you've got a handle on things, and then boom, something else happens. And I'm just talking about soccer, not even the rest of the world.
I don't even know what you're talking about. Nothing's going on.
Nothing's going on.
So anyway, yeah, last week was a really long, long episode, and we're expecting this week to be a short episode, which is so it'll sort of even out a little bit. So if you're looking, if you have that 1 hour ride to work, and you're looking forward to the hour long podcast, you're probably not going to get it this week. Although who knows? We're just starting out. We could get sidetracked. Who knows? Anyway, Dave, we will start out by talking about Orlando City's final home match, of course, the final Orlando City competitive match in Kaká's career, and the Columbus Crew came to town, and it was not good. It stinks. The Crew managed to get a goal, and Orlando City didn't manage to get a shot on goal, although they had plenty of shot attempts. They just decided that it was Carlos Rivas night, and we were gonna pay tribute to the Colombian by shooting everything over the bar, and except for, of course, Carlos Rivas himself, who couldn't really trouble himself to get on the ball a whole lot. So so Columbus gets a goal from Ola Kamara, which I don't know, there's a hint of offside, but they didn't really review it or anything, and it was kind of hard to tell. I've seen a few angles of it now, and it looks like it's about even. So it really doesn't matter anyway, because Orlando City already eliminated from the playoffs. Would have been nice to at least get a point in Kaká's home finale. But, I mean, really, do we want Kaká to go out? You don't want him to go out with a loss, but do you really want to go out with a 0-0 draw either? So not good. Kaká wasn't great. I think most of the team wasn't great. I did the grades this week, and I didn't give out I think the highest grade I gave out was like a 7, and there was one of those, and everybody else was 6, 6.5, 5.5, sort of in the meh range. Nothing good or great. And it just wasn't a good game for Orlando City Soccer Club to end the home schedule on, and now they've got one game left. They'll go to Philadelphia this Sunday for decision day, and really the only decision to be made is which team is worse, Orlando City or Philadelphia Union. They'll battle it out on the pitch at Talon Energy Stadium to determine that. So, Dave, anything really to say about this game? You got anything to add?
The only thing I would add is obviously, emotions were high for Kaká, and understandably so. And I thought that despite the loss, that was a nice thing to see. Not that we expect any different from him. And I'll even, he didn't have the best game, but, given everything that he was probably going through his head and all that, I'll even, it's his last match with us. I'll give him a pass on that. He had so much going on in his head after these last couple of years here. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, I know why Rivas didn't have to get on the ball much, because everybody else was doing what he does, so he didn't feel the need to do it.
Yeah, that could be. Yeah, Kaká, very emotional day for him. Tears in his eyes during the anthem, which is not even his anthem. He's not from this country, but yeah, it was an emotional day for him. In stoppage time, as the Lions are trying to find an equalizer, two kids decide to run out onto the pitch and help Columbus out by wasting a little bit more time. Give the "we're not worthy" sign to Kaká, get a hug from him, and then get escorted to their seats. And then I assume by security on out of the stadium. But they're minors; they won't be charged, and they won't spend a night in jail or anything. Interesting. I mean, Kaká handled that like the way he handles everything, very graciously, with class and with humility. So, good for him, because that was probably, based on the game itself, probably the highlight of the match anyway. So, So Kaká's done. He gone. And I know people, before you write and say, you know, he's going to play in the Puerto Rico friendly. It's a friendly. Come on.
Right.
Friendlies are friendlies. And if friendlies really mattered, none of you would hate Seb Hines. None of you. he'd be a folk hero. So.
And we wouldn't call them friendlies.
Yeah. So anyway, Dave, your man of the match for another loss in the 2017 season.
It's been rough. It has to be Yoshi Yotun. You know, like you say, on a very meh night from everybody. He did do one of those Carlos shots over the bar, but you know, otherwise he was making his presence in the midfield known. So that's. There wasn't anything that he necessarily did that was spectacular, but amongst a bunch of very average to below average performances, he was the best choice.
Yeah, I agree. I had him as the man of the match in the player grades this week. Really a high level of play from him. His passing was a little bit down from where it is percentage-wise, but he still made several key passes, creating chances. He was dangerous on the ball and around the area. And there was a noticeable drop in performance and possession when Jason Christ brought on offensive reinforcements and moved Yoshi back to left back. And the thought there is sound in that bringing on an offensive player and replacing Donny Toya with a very offensive-minded player. And but it just didn't work. I think Yoshi needs to be closer to the goal. I think he needs to be further up the pitch and not so deep. It's just, you know, he's... When he goes to left back, he plays left back, and he's not able to command as much of the pitch as he had previously. And the team wasn't getting that from anyone else. I mean, Carlos Rivas was really kind of invisible when he came on. Kaká was kind of not really facilitating the way we normally see him facilitate in the midfield. And, of course, it's going to be very difficult to break down Columbus when they've got a lead. So not the best game. I do want to talk a little bit about Columbus, though, Dave, before we move to the next topic, because, you know, we had this kind of a really bizarre bombshell in the middle of the week about, you know, how Anthony Precourt is talking about moving the founding club of MLS from Columbus to Austin, Texas. And as you know, I call Columbus my hometown, and I spent many years there and went to school there. And I moved out of Columbus during the Crew's first year of existence. And it was sort of a team that I guess I never was. If you would have said, "Oh, who's your favorite MLS club?" I'd have said, "Well, Columbus Crew." But I never really was like a live and breathe the Crew kind of person. I did want to. I did follow them. I was. You know, I would watch their games whenever possible. But, of course, back then, you know, 96, there wasn't a lot of MLS games on TV.
Right.
It wasn't – you couldn't really watch them from afar too often. And so, you know, I would check scores and that kind of thing and see how they did. And, you know, they were kind of average the first few years. And then they started to get a little bit better. They won the U.S. Open Cup in 2002, I think it was. So, you know, I watched them a little bit. I can't, when I'd come back to town, I would go to a game. But it wasn't really the experiences that we're having now with Orlando City. When the, you know, I lived in town when they came here from Austin, ironically.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
They, you know, just kind of captured me right off the bat with their style and their they had, you know, a flair, and the games were exciting and fun, and the atmosphere was great, and everything about the club was top notch, even though it was, you know, not a top flight team. And then we watched them grow up into an MLS club right here, and it was sort of, you know, kind of sealed the deal. It was just, you know, it was love at first sight, and then it just continued to be something that grew and grew for me and my fandom. So, you know, I own a Columbus Crew jersey, but I'd never wear it. It's in my drawer. But you know, for me, that it really hurts my heart to think that in 2019, this storied franchise of Major League Soccer, that in many ways, when the league was struggling, the fans of Columbus were among those that really propped the league up and kept it going. A couple of other cities, obviously, as well, but it was they were there. They were the cornerstone. They were one of the cornerstone franchises of the league, and now that Precourt is this sort of interloper, swoops in, buys the team, and you kind of saw things kind of improve for a while. They got a stadium naming rights deal, so Cruz Stadium became Mapfre Stadium, and they got new jersey sponsors, and they also got a big deal partnership with Acura. So they started to make some inroads, and then the next thing you don't really hear anything else about it, and the next thing you hear is, oh yeah, they're just not the marketing metrics aren't good, not keeping up with the rest of the league. Attendance isn't where we want it. We're gonna move to Austin if we don't get a new stadium. And
Weird, really weird.
it's kind of crazy because from my perspective, Columbus was the first team in the league to build their own soccer-specific stadium. So now people are saying, well, their stadium is substandard. Well, let's not punish them because they were ahead of the curve. Let's not punish the fans there because, that city and those fans, everybody involved, got it done. And, give them a chance to get it done again. I don't think really there's anything necessarily wrong with I really don't like calling it Mapfre Stadium, so I'm going to call it Cruz Stadium. It's a few blocks from campus. I mean, just minutes from downtown. It's not far. It's not like it's one of these deals that it's not hard to get to. It's right off I-71. It's not a bad location. It doesn't have that kind of sort of neighborhood feel to it as much because there's not a lot of like local establishments in the area. You can't like there's not a lot of bars and restaurants right outside that you can pop in and kind of make a day of it kind of thing, which you get with like the Columbus Blue Jackets, and the arena district has propped up around the arena and really made that a really nice area. And I think that that's what Anthony Precourt wants for his team. But there's not a lot of good spots downtown to build a soccer stadium in Columbus, so I don't know how he's going to get that done. And I don't know. It was odd to me because there was a provision in the purchase agreement, is the way I understand it, that he could move it to Austin, and like Austin was specifically mentioned. So it's just smacks of something that he wanted to do this all along, and it's cheaper than buying an expansion franchise.
Right.
So it just really seems very disingenuous to me. I don't want this to happen to the fans of Columbus because, even though a lot of them say mean and hurtful things about our soccer team to us on social media, I grew up in Ohio, and I've seen my friends lose the Cleveland Browns. I from just a weird quirk of fate, I played football at the YMCA at a very early age for a team called the Dolphins, and when I found out there was a real Dolphins, that became my favorite team, obviously. But everybody else I knew were Browns and Bengals fans, and when the Browns moved away, I mean, I have friends that just. Some of them, it just changed their entire personality, and it never came back, even when the new Browns came. So it very profoundly changed some of these people. Like it took a piece of their soul or of their identity with them. And I know you can relate to that because
Yep.
You were a Baltimore Colts fan.
And ironically, we got the Browns.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, nobody should, no fan should have to, in my case, see their team moved out in the middle of the night in Mayflower trucks. I mean, it's heart-wrenching. We had internal discussions, but I refuse to call Indianapolis by that name, just on principle. And it's so, like you said, they do say some hateful things to us all, some of the times on the Twitters and everywhere else. But I certainly don't wish that upon any fan base, because that's, that's something that's a bit out of the, the fans, ability to do anything. I mean, okay, protest, write letters, talk to your civic leaders or whatever. But at the end of the day, if some rich guy wants to move a team, he's going to move a team.
Yeah, exactly. And so, I mean, I'm hoping that they can get it worked out. It was just disappointing to see that Don Garber seemed to be coming out and saying, "Hey, you know, they're dropping the ball, so they have my permission to go look at Austin, and my support." And I don't think that that's right. I think that you're a single entity league, mm-hmm. and you should be trying to maintain your franchises and not. And I mean, really, that's the difference between what we've got here and what they have in Europe, is that those are actual soccer clubs. There's a ownership stake with the fans. There's, you know, it's a club. And here, right. these are franchises. They're not actually clubs, even if they say soccer club or football club in the name. They're not really clubs. So anyway, hopefully they'll get it all worked out and they'll be able to keep the team in Columbus, and you know, if they get a nice new stadium or refurbish Crew Stadium, whatever they need to do, you know, that's you know, hopefully that'll get done. But I could tell you this, I mean, you go downtown here and you see murals and you see street signs and you see you know, posters up in businesses, that you really can't walk more a block without seeing some sign that Orlando City is in this town,
right?
But if you go to Columbus, you really don't know that the team has that the city has an MLS team. It's just not in your face like it is here. It's to me, the buck stops with Precourt himself, in that he's not making it a mandate to get the word out. I don't know if they have car magnets there like they have here. I mean, they should be giving out, you know, thousands and thousands of those things, because really that seemed to be a real catalyst for the groundswell of support that we have here, is those lions started appearing on everybody's bumpers, and then the next thing you knew, everybody had one.
There's one on my car in Tallahassee, for goodness sake.
So anyway, whatever you got to do, Precourt, you know, keep the team there. Don't be holding the city hostage, and don't toy with fans' emotions, because it's not cool. I mean, this announcement came out, or you know, this kind of story broke after season ticket deposits were down for next year. They're non-refundable, Dave. So yeah. Who wants to plunk down money for a lame duck season if they're going to be moving at the end of the year?
Yeah, nobody. And you know, basically, Precourt, don't be an Ursay. Nobody likes an Ursay.
Don't be a Titanic douche nozzle, I think is what we're trying to say here.
I thought that's what I did say.
Yeah, okay. You did. Don't be a Modell. Don't be an Ursay. Don't be that guy. Anyway, Dave, let's move on to the Young Lions of Orlando City B, who crashed and burned against the Tampa Bay Rowdies last week, last Thursday night, in front of a very, very modest crowd, a very raucous crowd for the size, but a very modest crowd, a very disappointing crowd for an I-4 derby that was had playoff implications for, you know, Orlando City B. And, you know, the team came out and they played very hard. They did generate some chances, but they weren't able to get anything, you know, much like the senior team against Columbus. They just couldn't get anything in the net. And, you know, the next thing you know, they give up a goal. And that one was, I believe that first goal was off a corner for Tampa. Somebody just lost their man, and, you know, it's 1-0 next thing you know. And you know, they fought hard till the end. And then, you know, there was a garbage time goal. They got hit on the counter very, very late in that game for a second goal. So Tampa won it 2-0, and that eliminated OCB. OCB needed to win. They couldn't even draw. They needed to win that game and get help from one of three teams. Well, it turned out two of those teams helped them out, but they did. They weren't in a position right. to jump over them. So they finished 2 points behind both New York and Bethlehem, and they finish outside, just outside the playoff line, in ninth place in the Eastern Conference. And Dave, we talked about this in our chat room. The bombshell that came out Tuesday night on Twitter, Brian Strauss of Sports Illustrated tweeted, "Oh, why not a late night unconfirmed rumor?" And he talked about the Vancouver Whitecaps 2 leaving USL, and he said the other team, Orlando City B. And so of course, you know,
we all wake up and go,
we're like, what? So, you know, everybody is digging, you know, everybody on the staff was digging today, you know, talk to who, you know, go shake the trees, rattle your sources. Let's find out what's going on. And, you know, it did seem that there were people in the organization itself who thought OCB was done. Today, the club has said, or the spokesperson, Diego Kochko, he said he talked to Alex Leitao, and they are committed next year to USL. And, you know, I don't know what that means. Does that mean that they stay OCB? Does it mean they stay in Orlando City Stadium? I don't know the answer to either of those teams either of those questions, but I do know that in some form they're going to have some kind of a presence in USL. I don't know what that looks like at this point. We don't know anything about it. What we do know, Dave, is that 11 players were sent marching today from Orlando City B. Guys on USL contracts. There were 7 guys who were not picked up and 4 guys who were out of contract. Their contracts expired, and it was quite the exodus. Now, they only kept 4 players on. Last year, they made wholesale changes, and they only kept 5 players on. So this is even a bigger massacre than last year. But, Dave, there's some pretty big names from OCB on this list that were not renewed. Defenders Zach Ellis Hayden, Zach Carroll, and Timbo, 2 of those mm-hmm. 3 made our best 11 for OCB this year. Especially Zach Carroll down the stretch was a rock at center back. He started the season a little shaky, but I think once he got his bearings, once he got some chemistry with his partners here and got to know the players he was playing with, he really settled in nicely at center back for Orlando City. Zach Ellis Hayden was probably the team's best right back this year, and it didn't even matter if MLS guys played or not. He was just very, very solid. Midfielders who are out of contract or who were not renewed, Jordan Schweitzer, who is, of course, recently called up to the Canadian national team, not the Canadian national youth team, Canadian yeah. national men's team. But he's not here anymore. Danny Deacon, the club's 3rd round pick in the 2017 MLS Super Draft, gone. And a crowd favorite, Austin Martz, a guy who was both a midfielder and a right back at times. This kid has got the highest motor I've seen in USL in years. He just never stops. And it's going to be, it was a pleasure to cover him. It's going to suck to not cover him anymore. So, and then forward Michael Cox, who's been here for 2 years. And is the second all-time leading goal scorer for Orlando City B with 13 goals across 2 seasons.
Yeah, including one recently. I mean, you know, it's that's a lot of people, and that's not even all of them. I mean, we haven't even gotten everybody.
Right.
So.
The 4 players who were out of contract, the expired contracts. Goalkeeper Jake Fenlison, who was very instrumental after. Earl Edwards Jr. was called up to replace Josh Saunders with the first team. Jake took the ball from there and did quite well. Defender Scott Thompson, who kind of was in and out of the lineup all year. He played some midfielder on the left side, played some left back. Didn't really have a great season from my perspective, but he always put in a good work rate. Midfielders Paul Klaus and Lewis Neal. And of course, Lewis Neal's been with the club for a long time, both in the MLS play and the USL, both versions of Orlando City's USL team. Lewis Neal is the co-leader in games played for Orlando City B with 48 across the last 2 years, along with Pierre Da Silva. So some big names on that list, and it is what it is. It's a developmental team, and you know, realistically, the team is just not it's put together to try to develop guys and to give, we've talked about it any number of times of what mm-hmm. OCB is there for. And it's to give guys minutes coming back from injuries, to give guys minutes that have been on the bench for a few weeks and haven't seen any competitive minutes, and also to develop the next wave. And, you know, these guys, by and large, are starting to get into. You know, some of them are a little older, like Lewis Neal. Timbo's 27 years old, very useful player at the USL level, and a kind of guy you want on your team, but because he can play midfield, he can play, you know, center back, he can play fullback, but he's just not in the club's future plans at 27. So, you know, there's always this kind of turnover. And the guys who were kept are all 19 years old. Albert Dequa, Joe Gallardo, Umeni Jules, and Riley Kraft are all 19. The quartet combined for only 42 appearances for OCB this year. Only 24 starts for those four players combined.
Well, and you have to figure that, you know, like you said, last year there was, you know, a culling as well. So it's not like this is unprecedented or anything. Mm-hmm. Plus, you know, there's going to be some academy graduates who are going to be given a shot, presumably, assuming that, you know, OCB is in the existence that it is, you know, as of right now. Mm-hmm. Like you said, we don't know exactly what it's all going to look like this, you know, next year. But if things stay the same, then some of those guys are going to get a chance. So it seems to me that it's exactly what we've talked about before, is that it's to develop that next wave, and that means those young guys and seeing who's got it and who doesn't, and get them that next stage of development so we can get them up to the MLS squad. You know, Pierre De Silva, Haji Berry, Earl Edwards Jr., all good examples of that.
Yeah, now if you hadn't heard some of the names that you might be expecting to hear that we didn't discuss, it's probably because they're on MLS contracts. Guys like Pierre De Silva, Richie Larea, Haji Berry, they're all on MLS contracts. They were not part of this announcement today. Also, Connor Donovan, technically MLS contract. He could be on the way out too. I believe his Generation Adidas deal may be over, or there may be one more option year. I'm not sure on his contract status, but I would expect some of those guys might be on their way out as well. And realistically, if this team comes back and the status quo is held and there is an Orlando City B playing at Orlando City Stadium next year in the same manner that it did this year, we're going to be in for a lot of signings in the offseason.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the good thing that you and I can look at this, you know, perspective wise, and that's going to give us stuff to talk about. So that's nice for us. And, you know, for the listeners, hey, it's always neat hearing about the new guys and, you know, what they can do, and, you know, figuring out, you know, who might be the next guy.
Yeah. We're not going to get to talk about it till like January though, because they always like kind of lump those signings all at once at the end of the off season. So it's not going to help our off season content much, Dave.
Oh, the tail end of it.
So anyway, it will be interesting to continue to follow this story. Will Orlando City be back as it is? Will it be kind of that they're going to be the current OCB players maybe loaned to another team? Will they find a new location to play? We've actually heard credible people that are in a position to know have given us every possible answer on these questions. So nothing's on the record, but behind the scenes, we're talking to people that do, you know, they are in a position, they're in positions where they should know what's going on. And if they're giving us a variety of responses, you know, maybe that none of this is even decided yet. I mean, we just don't know. We're doing the best we can to get something on the record. But of course, you know, sensitive information, nobody wants to get that out there and be the person that is responsible for it being out there. So we've talked to a number of people with and around the organization. So we will continue to do that, Dave, and we'll find out if we can learn anything new in the coming weeks about Orlando City B. I personally thought the Young Lions were a lot of fun to watch. Yeah. Atmosphere wasn't great because you know, the small you know, audiences that showed up for those games, which really boggles my mind, because some of those games were free for season ticket holders. And I mean, let's put it this way: if you could go to the minor leagues and see a young LeBron James — he didn't do this because he went right from high school to the pros — but let's say that he played for some minor league team and he was just some kid, you know, 19 years old, and he was a kid, and he was playing in some minor league somewhere. Would you have wished that you had gone to see him way back then, and then he became this big star?
Of course, because then you've got the, you know what, I remember when I saw so-and-so, and they were this, and, you know, yeah, of course.
Yeah, I mean, we used to go to Columbus Clippers games and see, you know, guys like Goose Gossage and Don Mattingly, and they turned into these Major League Baseball all-stars year after year. And, you know, it was really cool to see these guys before they became anybody. And, you know, that's what people could be doing now. You could go watch Pierre DeSilva. You could go watch Richie Larea, Haji Berry. I'm not saying any of those guys will become, you know, MLS all-stars, but they could.
Yeah.
And you could have said, well, you know, I've been watching this guy since he was, you know, just a pup his first couple of years. And quite frankly, at least once a game, Pierre DeSilva does something that makes you go, whoa. And Haji Berry's speed at the USL level is just, it's fun to watch him just blast past people like he was shot out of a gun. And Richie Larea, with his movement at that level has been quite good. And, you know, some of these kids that they kept, I mean, Dequa showed some signs that he could be a Haji Berry type. He's not very polished, but he's, you know, still very, very young. Yomeni Jules, I thought, played really well at times. And when he got some chances, and I thought he probably should have got more games than he did. But, you know, just a kid, and you don't want to maybe trust a teenager at a defensive position too often. And Joe Gallardo is another guy who could blossom into somebody really special. So, as you mentioned, Dave, the academy is going to graduate some really good players. Will they go college like a lot of last year's did? I don't know. Will some of those college guys come out? Probably not the ones that went last year, probably not for another year. But a guy like David Loera as a freshman at NC State is really, really, really blossoming. And he could be, you know, he could be in a position to get a professional contract sooner rather than later. So you never know what's going to happen. But again, we'll keep an eye on it, and we will report anything there is to report.
Absolutely.
All right, Dave. We're just running through this tonight pretty quickly, actually, because one of the things that we were supposed to do this week was to interview Anthony Pulis. And Skype decided to take a giant flaming dump on Tuesday night. And so we were not able to get the podcast recorded on Tuesday and or the interview done. And Ant was not available when we did have some time. Now, I could have went out and scoured the streets for another quality guest, but it's been a long week, and we're not doing that. So no guest tonight. I'm saying.
We kept everybody for so long last week, not so much this week.
Yep, so we're going to start cruising a little more. I went to the NWSL championship game at Orlando City Stadium, Dave. It was about, I think, a little bit over 8,000 showed up for that, which would have been above average for a Pride crowd. But of course, I thought it was a little disappointing for a championship game right here in our city. I thought a lot more local fans would show up for that game. I thought it was a really good turnout from Portland fans who came. North Carolina had quite a few. And there were some Pride fans who just came out to watch the game and enjoy the experience. It was a brutal game. Neither team reached 60% passing accuracy. Very physical game. Tobin Heath was knocking Courage players out of the game left and right. So ironically, she is now out for the U.S. Women's National Team, as is Taylor Smith, who she knocked out very early in that game. And I think really changed the complexion of that game, Dave, because Taylor Smith is one of those players who can get forward from her fullback position, kind of like Steph Catley, and help with the offense. And I thought that the Courage didn't, while the Courage did have more scoring chances and more shots than Portland did, I thought that they really could have gotten forward more had Smith been able to stay on the pitch. And it was disappointing that she went out so early and really on a foul that Tobin Heath should have been booked for. And she wasn't booked. And I think that referee Danielle Chesky really set the tone for that game by not booking her because it was just really, really ugly and brutal with some of the tackling. And, you know, there could have easily been a couple of players sent off in that game. And it was just, there was just no reason to take a final which with that much emotion and just add the, you know, the element of people just getting crushed every few minutes. It was really, really brutal.
Yeah, and I wouldn't want to mess with Tobin Heath, you know, when she's not in a championship game. You know, she's a tough son of a gun. So, but yeah, like you said, it seemed like players were going down left and right, and the brutal word you used was absolutely correct. I mean, it wasn't the most fun soccer game to watch.
Mm-hmm. Now, Lindsey Horan had the game's only goal. It was off a set piece. Of course, because after all the fouling that the Thorns did, they, of course, won the game off of a foul on North Carolina, ironically. But it was really tough on North Carolina because not only did Smith get out early, but also in the first half, Smith's replacement was a player that had been playing in the midfield. She came to right back, and she was the next player knocked out of the game. And so, you know... they just decided, hey, we're not even going to do this anymore, and they kind of changed shape, and it really affected probably what they had worked on. Their game plan had to change before halftime. It was really kind of unfortunate because it kind of would have been interesting to have seen, you know, how the game would have unfolded had the North Carolina had to make two injury subs in the first half. But anyway, congratulations to Portland Thorns. I thought that it was a tough, hard-fought game, a defensive battle like we kind of thought it would be, and the game kind of just turned on the first goal, and that goal went to the Thorns, and credit to them. They and North Carolina showed all year long that they were the best teams in the league by far. It was nice to hear Tom Cermani come on our show and say how much he wanted to get more physical for next year and get some more, some more physical players, so they can compete with the Portlands and the North Carolinas. And, of course, you know, there'll be some turnover on those teams too. So, you know, if Orlando can keep mostly what it has and maybe add a couple players, there's no reason that the Pride can't be right up there battling for the Supporter Shield in 2018, Dave.
Well, absolutely, especially given, you know, that, that they'll have some of those pieces right from the get-go, you know, with Alex not traveling and Marta being there, you know, without and Ashlyn hopefully not getting hurt. I mean, there were a bunch of things that that went against the Pride having a consistent year, and they were still able to make the playoffs, which, you know, I thought was a fantastic result for the season. You know, obviously disappointed they didn't go further, but you certainly can't, you know, be upset with, you know, how they did. And then, like I said, if you've got all those pieces and potentially more, when you start out next season, well, gosh and golly, things could go even better.
All right, so I got a beef with the NWSL.
Okay, go for it.
Paul Riley of the North Carolina Courage was named NWSL Coach of the Year for 2017, which is okay in and of itself. Let's say that. Let's say that it's okay that he won it. But here's the thing that I take exception to, Dave. Paul Riley came into this season with the champions of the NWSL. Mm-hmm. They won the NWSL regular season. So he took a good team and he kept them good. That's to be applauded. Okay.
Sure.
I'll give you a hand, you know, I'll give you a hand for that. Tom Cermani came into this season with a bad team. He came into the second month of the season, even into the third month of the season with a bad team. And then he went on an unbelievable run and finished in third place, made the playoffs. All he had to do that was to move Ali Krieger from right back to right center back with Tony Presley, to left center back with Monica, move his big off-season acquisition at center back, move her to defensive midfield, and play a lot of rookie Rachel Hill, survive a third of the season without his star striker, and the first few games without his midfielder. So...
and then a little section in the middle there without one of the best keepers in the world.
Right. So tell me, Dave, who had the tougher job this year? Paul Riley keeping a good team good or Tom Cermani making a bad team good?
Well, I'm going to sound like I'm biased, but I believe that Cermani had the tougher job there. If you've got a kid and they're getting straight A's and you give them a pat on the back and they continue to get straight A's. Well, you haven't really done much. But if you got a kid who's getting C's and all of a sudden they're getting A's because of something you did, well, gosh.
Maybe they should get a pat on the back, maybe.
Well, that's – yeah, exactly. So it's fairly obvious. I'm going to agree with your beef and say that is justified beef. And unfortunately, there's probably not much we can do about it.
I led you to that conclusion, by the way. That was a very leading question.
It was, but that's okay. I probably would have gotten there on my own anyway.
As you say. Okay, Dave, we have got some Ask the Mainland Podcast questions this week. And I may have lost some of these because I tried to like them, but I also like other things while, you know, in the course of the, so I don't really necessarily always remember, you know, when I'm going through here, sometimes I don't, you know, I miss one and I don't like it. And if I don't like it, then I don't see it. And some people don't put the Ask TMLPC, you know, hashtag on there. So that also makes it hard to find. So I'm doing the best that I can, I guess, is what I'm saying. If I missed your question, please feel free to ask it again next week. Tweet back at me. And please remember, when you tweet at the Mainland, please include that hashtag AskTMLPC. And if you did it right the first time and we still don't read your question, it means I lost it. So just please just send it again. I'm an old person, and us olds, well, sometimes we are forgetful, we lose things and that kind of thing. So, and Twitter doesn't really make it easy to just like dump stuff in a folder and find it later, quite frankly. So anyway, I'm making excuses at this point, but that's what it is. Also, if you want to email us your question, you can do that. And I'll definitely see that, because that would be a very easy way for it to stand out, because no one has ever emailed us a question except for, I think, Mark Johnson emailed you.
Right.
So anyway, did Mark Johnson send a question this week?
He did. Would you like to start out with that one?
Yeah, let's start with Mark Johnson. Our regulars will definitely take precedence over the sometimes people.
Okay, so he had a it's somewhat soccer related. Basically, he wanted to know what happened to the Pitch Invaders, the young gentleman who went out and gave the I'm not worthy to Kaká.
Well, Mark, I'm glad you asked that question. Have you ever heard of, I think it's pronounced Guantanamo Bay? No.
Is it Guantanamo?
Guantanamo. Yeah, they went to have Chinese food after the game. They went to, that'd be a great name for a Chinese restaurant, Guantanamo.
That's a winning idea right there, and you better get that trademarked really quickly, because otherwise it's going to be gone.
Yes. Anyway, Mark, they were, as you know, escorted from the pitch by our very own captain Kaká, and I did not sort of watch, but I was kind of told that the person that brought them and they were escorted out of the stadium. But of course, they didn't miss much of the game because it was already in stoppage time. So now I don't know if there's any other repercussions. I can ask the PR staff with the club and find out if they're like banned for life or anything. You know, anything juicy like that. That would be really bad.
I hope not.
Yeah, that would be. Know. Yeah, that would not be good. You don't do that to kids, and that's just not good PR. So
yeah.
So anyway, thanks, Mark, for that question. We don't have the full answer, but we do know they were not asked to stay.
They weren't given they didn't get a commemorative jersey, you know, signed by Kaká or anything like that.
No, probably not.
Okay. Oh, well.
All right. So what is that the only one that Mark sent?
That's all he had time for. He's in law school. He's busy.
Oh, well, you know, I don't know why he would be busy.
Right.
I went to college. It wasn't all that busy. Anyway. Okay. So let's get to our Twitter questions. Ken M wants to know on Twitter, what does next year's starting lineup look like? Who from this year's team is gone next year? Before you answer that, Dave, I do want to say that our off-season, we will definitely get into our stay or go. We do that every off-season. The first show after the season ends, we'll do our stays and goes kind of thing, and we'll sort of make our predictions then. But I would say in the interest of brevity, Dave, give me five players from this year's roster who start next year, in your opinion.
Let's see. Dom Dwyer, Spectre. Let's see. Going through the head. Surprisingly, this one was a little iffy, but Seb Hynes. Gosh, some of these, because I'm very on the fence about will they stay or will they go. Let's see.
Seb Hynes was a bold prediction by you.
I know.
All right. So you said, so far, you've said Dwyer, yep. Spectre, Hynes. Who else?
Let's do, Yotun, obviously, and Sutter.
Okay, so I am going to say five starters next year that are currently on this roster. Dwyer, Spectre, Sutter, Yotun, Bendick.
Oh, yeah, I missed the obvious one, didn't I? Jeez.
I would say them, who is gone from this year's team. I believe Kyle Larin will be sold. Kaká will obviously be gone. Let's do five of these each, too.
Okay.
I'll do the gone, five guys gone first. Okay, so I already said Kaká, I already said Larin. I think Carlos Rivas will be gone. That's three. I think Dylan Powers will be gone. I just don't think he's fit in well so far. But I could be wrong. That he's my sort of like my wild card. Like you said, Seb Hynes was sort of your bold prediction. Dylan Powers would be my bold prediction. What do I got? Four?
Yeah.
Okay. And number five. I know Alex Letow said he'd be back, but I just don't see how Nocerino comes back next year.
Okay. So
you're
Kaká, obviously, I agree with you on Larin. I think they get some going to get some money for him. let's see. Dylan Powers. I'm kind of with you on that one. It hasn't been. I don't know that we've gotten anything much out of them. We could be wrong on that. Let's see who else. And I know I agreed with like pretty much everybody you said. So who else did you mention?
Rivas.
Yes. Sorry. That's who I was. I was trying to remember. Yeah. Definitely think Carlos is gone. He just has to live up to expectations.
No, Chirino was my fifth.
Oh yeah. That one. Oh man. That one's kind of a, cause if Alex hadn't said something, that would be a definite for me and I'll stick with it. But that is a coin flip kind of a thing. You know, I'm okay if he stays where he goes, but
yeah.
It's, you know.
Yeah, he's been kind of reborn a little on the right side, but I don't think he offers enough offensively to keep him at his salary. And even though Alex said he expects him back, he's not Nicky Budalic. He's not Jason Kreiss. And I don't know, you know, what options they'll have in the offseason. I got to think they want a right side Yoshi. I got to think Yoshi's going to be on the left. They want someone like him on the right.
Mm-hmm.
They want a destroyer at the bottom of the diamond, whether that's Aguita or whoever it is, somebody that's not on the team yet. I don't know. And, they need somebody up top. You know what? Somebody we didn't say is Giles Barnes.
Maybe
he's the one that's gone. So anyway, we will, of course, do the stays goes at the end of the year. But thanks, Ken, for your question. Luis Hernandez asked about the crew possibly leaving Ohio. We talked about that earlier in the show. I think we both think that that's a terrible idea. We don't think it's good for the league. We don't think it's good for the fans, obviously. And it's terrible for the city of Columbus. So I think we've got that covered. JR wants to know, did I miss the TIFO for our departing captain of 3 years?
I wasn't at the stadium and they didn't show it on TV, so you're going to have to be the one that answers this one.
I would say you yes and no. Yes, you missed it if it was really small, like a postage stamp or something, or a postcard. No, if they made it a normal size, you didn't miss it because they never showed one. In fairness, I think the announcement was just a few days before the game. Possibly they didn't have time to make one in the few days before the game. So I don't know. I did expect one for the final game. Even before the Kaká announcement, I would have thought that was a game you'd have one for, you know, at least like a sort of a thank you to the players or a send off or whatever. But for whatever reason, whether it's money or materials or time, whatever, the supporters groups did not do a TIFO for the final game. But I invite the supporters groups to write in and say, you know, if there was a reason why you didn't, let us know. Thanks, JR. David G. Could we see the roster cleanup on the main roster spread to the Young Lions as well? I think we got our answer there.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and take that one. Yes.
Yeah, I think we'll see something. Something's going to happen. It's.
I'm going to go a bold prediction here, and I'm going to say four guys that are left afterwards.
Yeah, so I think only about four USL guys.
Yeah, that'll be about it.
Yeah. That's a good call on you. David G., very big Orlando City B fan, by the way, must be, because his other question is, how do you see OCB faring in the offseason? Will Ant be at the helm, or could we see a different skipper?
Whew, there's so many things that go along with that, as in where and how is OCB going to B. Is it going to be as it is? Is it going to be something else? If we maintain OCB like we do and he wants to be here, then Ant will be here, because I'm certain that they would want him to be. Mm-hmm. If something weird happens and they're not technically OCB anymore, or who knows, gosh only knows. Regardless, I'm confident Ant will be someplace. But the quick answer is, if we have OCB as they are, then yes, Ant will be there.
Yeah, I think that unless someone offers Ant a better deal to go there, I think he's going to be back if there's a team. And, you know, we don't know what form that team will be in right now. We don't know. There's a lot of questions. I mean, that Brian Strauss thing was pretty, here's a guy from Sports Illustrated who should be in the know, who's got a pretty good network of contacts, saying that OCB is out. So, the team says that they're committed to USL, but they didn't say Orlando City B will be back as it was this year. So they didn't come out and necessarily give all the details yet. We have to wait and see what happens. But, I'm sure that with the job that Ant has done, that the club would love to have him back. So,
yeah, that whole tweet really sent our internal communications into quite the interesting read.
Yeah, it's not what you want to read when you're getting ready to go to bed.
No,
it's like, now I got to talk about this and think about it and ask questions and send emails and send texts and all kinds of things. Last question I see in our box, Dave, and of course, again, if I missed your question, please resend it, because it's just my ineptitude. It's not really, anything you did wrong. Luis Hernandez, our old friend again, he asks, what picks does Orlando City have going into the offseason? I'm assuming that's the MLS Super Draft picks. I have done a little bit of research, very preliminary research on this. As far as I know, just based on the information I can find online, I haven't had a chance to get with the communications department and confirm this, but as far as I know, Orlando City has all of its picks in this upcoming Super Draft. I am looking at the, of course, you're always taking a risk when you're looking at Wikipedia, but Wikipedia doesn't have the draft order yet, because obviously there's still games to be played, but what they do have is the trades. And I'm not seeing any trades from Orlando City to someone else on this list, first, second, third, or fourth round. In fact, oh, I'm sorry, I'm wrong. Round three, Orlando City's round three pick has gone to Dallas. That was from the Mikey Ambrose rights trade last year. So we don't have that. In fact, now I'm seeing the other one that I didn't see. I guess I'm kind of blind, really, when it comes down to it. The other one was the Sporting Kansas City. Tony Rocha's rights were acquired for next year's fourth. So we got a first and a second, and that's as of now. Who knows what we could have by the draft? Although, quite frankly, there's not a lot in the third and fourth rounds that end up making Major League Soccer team rosters. And you know, I think you see about what you're looking at talent-wise when you look at Danny Deacon this year for Orlando City B. Mm-hmm. You know, they brought him in the third round, I think around the 67th pick, I want to say, off the top of my head. You know, they signed him. They ended up cutting him and then assigning him to a USL deal. And even on that, he didn't really play a lot. I mean, he got some starts, and he was given minutes enough to try to make a difference. And he just really didn't really ever settle in and provide any kind of consistency for OCB this year. So, you know, it's a crapshoot, the MLS Super Draft. And if you get one player that makes your team out of that draft, that's pretty good, and you're more likely to get them in the first couple rounds. So Orlando City has a first and a second round for sure. We don't know if they might, you know, part with somebody to get to get another pick somewhere along the line. I know, you know, we all remember the trading up to get Haji Berry. They got Haji Berry and Richie Larea both in the first round the year before last. So, you know, looking ahead to 2019, Orlando City actually got a round four pick from Atlanta United.
Indeed. Yeah, there's so much that can happen between now and then. Like I said, the order hasn't even been decided. If they're looking at somebody who's already on a roster someplace and they, you know, need to give away a pick, they may end up doing that. There's so much that that has to happen before then. But like I said, at least for the moment, first and second.
This is fun, Dave, because we're actually going to go over an hour.
Holy cow, we sure are.
What we thought was going to be a short one. But in fairness, I had to rant about the Columbus thing for a bit, and then we had to talk about OCB quite a bit, which we don't normally do. But and then we had a lot of questions. So thanks, Luis, for your questions this week. We will look forward to getting that final draft order. But a first and second round pick, at least. Orlando City picked up a fourth round pick from Atlanta in 2019, but they also gave up their fourth rounder in 2019 to get Josh Saunders. So, you know, it's a situation where they traded one fourth and got another fourth back. So hopefully Atlanta will finish below Orlando City next year, and they'll be able to have a better pick.
Yeah, and we're not known for our brevity, so I'm not entirely surprised that we went over an hour.
We're verbose.
We are verbose.
Very, very gregarious people that would like to talk and hear the sound of our own voice. Dave, we have a game. We have one more game. We have no more OCB games. We have no more Pride games. We have one more Orlando City SC game. The Lions are going, Dave, to the Philadelphia Onion. Union. I think that's how it's pronounced. Union. And that's in Chester, PA. And I want to know what's your key matchup? What's your final score prediction?
Oh, you know, Philadelphia has actually been pretty good at home this year, despite their record. It's key matchup on this one is really tough because neither team is playing for anything other than to see who's the worst. You know, our guy's going to get, you know, a look to see how, you know, how dedicated they are, you know, to keep a spot or what. So there's so much going on in that. I'm going to say how we do in the midfield, you know, how much Yoshi do we have, you know, and how much ball control are we going to have in the midfield that we can maybe keep a little possession, keep them off the scoreboard at home where they, like I say, they have been good. And I would love to say that we're going to finish out with a win, but I'm just not going to. Like I said, Philly's been good at home. I'm going 1-0 loss.
Yeah, you know, I'm struggling to even think of a matchup in this game that really I care about at all. It's like,
right.
I don't know. Spectre against the Pong, maybe? I don't know. You're right. They have a 9-4-3 home record. They were terrible on the road, 1-10-6. So they're a little bit better than Orlando City at home. They were a little worse than Orlando City on the road. I don't see there's anything to play for. You could say, well, they're playing for their jobs. But, I mean, honestly, if you're Philadelphia is too. So
yeah.
It's going to be an ugly, stupid game that you won't remember. Like the ugly, stupid game 2 years ago at Philadelphia. the ugly, stupid game last year at Philadelphia. I don't know. It's I also see 1-0 to the Union. But I think if it would be fitting if it's a 0-0 draw between these two teams. It's just been a bad season. It's been a bad summer. We started off having two tremendous months, Dave, that we really enjoyed. And it's just been
so fun.
All downhill since then. So, it's going to be ugly. It's going to suck. You're going to watch this and go, wow, why am I watching this?
You're going to watch it because it's the last match of the season, right. And you're not going to be able to watch another one until next year, and so that's why you're going to do it.
Exactly. Watch it like – here's how I'm going to watch it. I'm going to watch it kind of like Mystery Science Theater 3000. I'm just going to make sarcastic remarks throughout the game. Some of them might make it onto Twitter.
I like this idea.
Some of the
like
cleaner ones will make it onto Twitter, maybe. But I'll probably be live tweeting the game and you know, doing my normal thing. I don't just give the play-by-play. A lot of times I'll give a little bit of commentary as well. So, look for some of that. And it might be like I haven't checked in 5 minutes, but nothing's happened, literally. That might be something like that. But it's not gonna be pleasant. But hopefully we'll get a moment of magic from Yoshimar Yotun or somebody. Maybe we'll see if Kyle Larin's hip allows him to play. Maybe he will, score his final game as a Lion, or final goal as a Lion. Who knows? Or maybe we'll get a Dom goal and a backflip. Who knows? But we haven't scored a lot of goals in Philadelphia in our time in MLS. So, we'll see what happens. It's the 34th game of the year, and then we have to wait until March to get another one that counts. So,
and since we both predicted 1-0 loss, then that is exactly what won't happen.
Yeah, it'd probably be worse.
Yeah.
That is going to wrap it up, Dave. Unless you have something else you want to add for this number 108 of the Mainland Podcast.
Other than appreciation to all the listeners, and go write us a review on the iTunes.
Absolutely, yeah. Give us a star rating, write a glowing review. If you give us a 5-star review, we will read it on the air. We didn't this week, and I didn't look to see if we had any this week, because again, we're a little discombobulated because of the Skype issues that we had last night. But if I see any, I'll read them next week, and we'll get that done. And we appreciate those that have done that so far. We have a pretty good rating. Every rating we get, every nice review we get, it enables us to reach a wider audience. So please do that. Okay, that'll do it for this episode of the Mainland Podcast. Please read our stuff at themainland.com. Like us on the Facebook. And follow us on Twitter at the Mainland and facebook.com/themainland. So that's where you can find us. I want to give you a programming note that we will be back next week to break down the Philadelphia game and any other news that has come out since this podcast was recorded. And then we'll be going to our off-season schedule, Dave. We will be doing it monthly, November, December, January, February. There'll be one a month unless something big happens that we maybe need to convene for a shorter version of a bonus podcast. Like let's say some major deal like Kyle Larin gets sold and they sign some big name player or something. We would we would definitely probably have to have a little discussion about that to not have to wait until, you know, 3 more weeks for the next podcast or whatever. But you know, we'll do whatever makes sense. If it's if something big happens and it's like a week out, we'll wait. If it's something big happens and it's like 3 more weeks to the next podcast, then we'll probably do like a little bonus podcast. So that's something you look forward to. Please continue to send us your questions for Ask the Mainland Podcast. It's more important in the off season than ever before, and it doesn't have to be soccer related. Just ask us whatever you know. We're like, you know, the Alexa of the world. You know, you can ask us. You know, like say, okay, Google, how big is a blue whale or whatever. We'll tell you the answers to those questions. You don't need Alexa or Google, although they're probably a lot faster and more responsive. But feel free to ask.
They don't wait for the tweet to go out and then to get read and then a couple days to go by and then they may be quicker, but you're right. I mean, we'll give an answer. It may not be right, but you'll definitely get an answer.
Yeah, we will actually. Our answers will be right. Oh, everybody okay. else might be wrong.
That's true.
And you may not be able to verify it online, but we'll give you the correct answer.
Yeah.
So anyway, thanks to Lucas from the Orlando City communications staff for bearing with us Tuesday night as we had some issues. What the issues were not ours; they were Skype related. Skype was down. It was a regional thing in several regions. Skype had some issues, so we were not able to get Ant Pulis on. We will continue to try to have him on. I assume that maybe they won't give him to us until they've, you know, sort of made some type of an announcement on what the plan is for next year. But we've had Ant on before. He's always good to talk to. So hopefully we'll be able to get him. And if not, you know, Jason Kreisen can be doing anything next week.
Yeah, why not?
So we've had him on last year at the end of the season too. So anyway, we'll try to get back to the guests next week. We apologize for going over an hour when we had no guest, but you know, we just won't shut the hell up.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Especially me. I will not shut the hell up. I ranted a little bit about the Columbus thing,
it's okay.
We'll be back next week to talk about the Philadelphia Union game and anything else that has come up between now and then. And we'll do all of that next week on episode 109, but that's it for 108. On behalf of David Rowe, I'm Michael Citro, the founder and managing editor of themainland.com, signing off the way I always do by saying, Go City!